Today is Thursday, March 7, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. Nikki Haley suspends her campaign, and Trump has a message for Haley supporters. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating. You can email us as well. We'd love to hear from you. QuickStartPodcast@CBN.org. We're all getting through the news of the cray here together each and every weekday morning, bright and early. Joining me today to get through it, Billy Hallowell. Trey is still on vacation. He'll be back next week. Billy, on the Focus story, we've got a positive one here. This Christian who is on American Idol, a fantastic, fantastic audition.
Yeah, and she's a Christian teenager, right? She's a young girl who's a great songwriter, great performer, and she really seemed to shock the judges, so we'll get into that story today.
Yeah. The lyrics of her song, by the way, that she wrote, very, very bold, so I loved it. We'll talk about all that coming up on The Focus. Also on the main thing, Billy, you talked to, at NRB, a person who's a family member is basically a hostage, one of the Hamas-held hostages here in Gaza, and it's been 152 days. And so you talked to them about what that was like.
Yeah, just heartbreaking. His brother-in-law, the man we interviewed, his brother-in-law has been captive, and he just gets into some of the other details of what his family saw and witnessed, and it just breaks your heart. It really does.
It really does. 152 days. It's unbelievable, horrible, evil, and wicked, really. And so you're going to hear what it's like for these family members, and it's really gut-wrenching stuff. So we're going to get to all of that and more. Don't forget to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts, including DC Debrief with John Stolness, who's going to be on our State of the Union coverage with me tonight, and Newsmakers with Billy Hallowell, full-length interviews each weekday. Don't miss those. And we're going to head to the news here in 90 seconds. Former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley announced she was suspending her campaign yesterday, but stopped short of endorsing former President Donald Trump. In response, Trump invited her supporters to, quote, join the greatest movement in the history of our nation. And he added that President Biden is, quote, the enemy. Trump was victorious in nearly all of the primary contests on Super Tuesday. That prompted Haley to make the decision most were expecting. Trump added on Truth Social that Nikki Haley got, quote, trounced last night in record-setting fashion, despite the fact that Democrats, for reasons unknown, are allowed to vote in Vermont and various other Republican primaries. In the Texas Panhandle, the largest wildfire in the state's history has consumed roughly 500 structures, and cattle ranchers have been especially hit hard, possibly losing thousands from their herds. The blaze is only about 37% contained. CBN's Operation Blessing is there on the ground helping those in need. You can find out more about those efforts in the article in the description of this podcast episode. And a woman named Stephanie Noble, who's got a bit of a following on TikTok, is going viral for a video in which she said she's child-free by choice and would rather take naps than deal with a screaming child. Those are just some of today's top headlines. You can check out those stories and more over at cbnnews.com. And Billy, I didn't want to, I'm bringing this one up because it's one of those off the beaten path stories. It's some influencer type. And all these people keep asking her why she doesn't have kids, why she doesn't have kids. And so I just thought this would be an interesting discussion here. And I want to elaborate on what she says here, because there's a couple things that came to mind that I thought would be worth exploring a little bit here just on different mindsets. So she said one of the common questions she gets from people when she tells them she doesn't want children is, well, what's your purpose in life then? And her response was, well, my purpose is getting my nails done, going shopping, and treating myself. And then she put up some fancy bag she bought or something like that. She said she loves to travel and get plenty of sleep. And she then talked about how great naps are. And then she said, so don't say I don't have a purpose just because I don't have kids. How dare you? So, Billy, my reaction to this, and I'll get yours here, is that, okay, the things she's trying to fill without kids are completely empty and hollow. And it's her right to go ahead and pursue those things, but she's not going to find any fulfillment in those whatsoever. Now, that said, I don't know about these people saying, hey, your life is worthless without kids. Now, obviously, kids are a blessing from the Lord. They're an inheritance. They're all of that. And so it's great to have them. But Paul didn't have kids. Like, you can be a Christian. You can have a purpose, and God can have a purpose for you if you don't have kids. So I think she's actually right on that front. I think she's just filling it with the wrong thing. So I just saw that, and these are the sorts of things I see a lot of times, so I felt like it was worth addressing.
Okay, yeah. First of all, two things.
Yeah.
This woman is also correct. No, nobody, even people who love their children, everybody would rather have a nap than deal with a screaming child,
of course.
Like, let's just be honest.
Right.
We all love our kids, but it's nice to nap sometimes, and nobody wants to deal with that, but it's part of parenting, and it teaches you a lot about yourself, and you learn a lot of patience, and you learn sacrificial love as a parent. Not everybody, you know, is called to be a parent.
Right.
And I think that is an important thing. You know, God has a different calling on everybody's life. And there may be that you are called to do something else. It may be that you can't have children, right? Or maybe that you choose not to because, again, of that calling. And at the same time, you're absolutely right. I mean, good luck with your bags and all your fancy things, because that's all going to fade away. And, you know, so yeah, I just think this is one of those things. It's between you and God and where he's calling you. And if you're not asking God where he's calling you and you're making that decision, you know, and maybe you were supposed to have kids and you chose not to do that, well, that's a different story. But I think we have to be careful with these conversations. So I agree with you 100%. But the nap thing just made me laugh, because I'm like, yeah, lady, you got it right.
Right. And so there's two.
Front.
Yeah. There's two reactions you could have. You could sort of, you know, dump on her for filling her life with these empty things. But I think a better approach as Christians would be to not just be like, well, what's your purpose in life? I mean, that's kind of like parent snobbery. Like, you know, I'm guilty of this. I have four kids. You know, I'm guilty of this all the time. Like, oh, it must be nice to like not, you know, have to have somebody asking you questions every 2 minutes of the day and taking all your money and everything else. Right. You know, like, it must be nice. Like, so I think we've all had those moments as parents looking on somebody without kids. But I think, and those are in our lower moments. I'm not proud of those moments. But I think what we should do then is say, okay, maybe the right way, and I don't know if these people are Christians that are approaching this woman, but the right way to approach somebody who's clearly filling their life with empty pursuits is not to shame them about their purpose. I mean, there's gentler ways that you can bring these things up and ask them, well, what do you do? Where do you find meaning? Like, what do you get out of that? You know, ask them questions and see what they say, and maybe that'll sort of lead them to the answers to see that, okay, maybe there isn't really anything here. Maybe God does want more for me than stocking up my bag collection. So there's better ways to go about that instead of just sitting there and dumping on somebody.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think, you know, we need to approach things faith first, not emotions first, not opinions first. And I think when somebody says these sorts of things, it's actually a great way in to the gospel and having those bigger conversations that matter, right? We get so hung up on the things that are not gospel conversations sometimes, and they're distractions. And if we don't handle them the right way, it actually turns people away from hearing the truth. Like, I would have a great conversation with her about, well, why do you think those things matter? And what's going to happen in 40 years when, those are the conversations you want to have that point you towards real meaning and Christ.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So I just thought that was a good conversation. Now, I think these are the sorts of things we should be thinking about as Christians, because we can all fall into these traps, and we can all just eat the popcorn and, you know, throw the jokes around and everything else. But I think there's something of more value that we can add to the conversation in situations like that. All right, so let's head over to the focus story now. And this Christian teenager we were talking about who auditioned for American Idol recently advanced, got to the Hollywood stage. She sang a powerful song about God, sin, and truth. So what's the story here?
Yeah, this is really an interesting one. This is Jennifer Jeffries. She's a 17-year-old from Starkville, Mississippi, and she ended up, and it's so interesting when you watch, you know, the interview with her, she ended up auditioning, but she almost didn't. She wasn't sure if she was good enough, right?
Yeah.
And so she shows up to American Idol, and she sings this ballad while playing the guitar, which I always love that when somebody can play an instrument and sing, and she's out there doing it in front of Katy Perry, Lionel Richie, and Luke Bryan, who are the judges on American Idol. And, you know, she just delivers this amazing song that she wrote. It's called Change My Ways. And, you know, she talked a little bit before we even get to the song In the interview before, they do a little package on American Idol, and they kind of tell where you're from, who you are. And she talked about the songs that she writes. She said, I write songs that are about personal things, things that I've been through. I write things that people can connect with them and know that they're not alone. She said, a lot happens in life, a lot of pain, but also a lot of joy. And so then she sings this song, and the song is one of the most mature Christian songs that I've probably heard. I mean, the 17-year-old out there, you know, singing some of the lyrics, you know, I've been feeding my flesh, I've been living in sin, my mouth's been running wild, and I've been acting like a wild child. And then at one point she says, make your ways my ways. So the entire song is about faith and struggle and sin, as you were saying at the top. And you just watch the judges' faces, and it's just an interesting experience to sort of see how they react to her.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned their faces on the article you have on faithwire.com right now, by the way. I love the picture of Katy Perry's face. It's perfect because it sums up pretty much how she reacted very, very well. And so how did the judges react?
You know, their focus, and keep in mind, Katy Perry has this Christian background. You know, she was like a Christian singer before she went mainstream. And, you know, I don't know how she would consider herself now, but their main reaction focused on her voice, the uniqueness of her voice. And it's true when you hear it, the way Katy Perry worded it, she said, you know, that the teenager has this unique grit to her voice. And Luke Bryan said, I was not expecting that voice. And so all three of the judges were blown away by her, and they advanced her in the competition to move forward, which is a big deal, obviously.
Yeah, definitely. What has Jennifer, has she talked about her faith in the past, like on social media or in public? And if so, what she said?
Yeah, she has. In fact, going back to 2022, there was a post on her Instagram where she talked about how she had misconceptions about God, about his love, and how she realized she was wrong. And she said, quote, I've never been more glad to be so wrong. She said, obviously, God saves people from their sins. She said, quote, God's love isn't paper thin. It's not confined to stay between our four walls. We feel we have no worth, but God thought we were worth dying for. And so that gives you just a lens into this kid and just how mature spiritually she seems to be. And we've got a link over. You can read more of her post and see more of her music in our article there.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. Her song is very moving. I mean, like you said, it's really well written and it's catchy, and her voice is different and unique. And so, yeah, what an opportunity here. What do you see, Billy, when you see these sorts of stories, this kind of comes up on your radar, what do you think the value is in bringing more attention to something like this?
Yeah, you know, look, the culture is a disaster, and you have all these moments of revival unfolding. And here on one of the most popular shows, this is a legacy show, American Idol, you have a teenager, right? We're told that teenagers don't care about God. We're told that they're disconnected and lost. And there's some truth to some of that. But you have this girl on a main stage sharing her faith with the world and with some of the biggest pop artists and musicians around. And that's a very rare thing. When that happens, we need to call that out, point it out. And look, Colton Dixon, who we're actually going to be having on the show in the next week or so, and plenty of others, they started on American Idol, right? So this has been a place where a lot of Christian artists have actually found their rooting. And so, but just from a cultural perspective, it's noteworthy when we see these moments happen, and we need to call it out and encourage the people like Jennifer to show up, because she almost didn't, right? To be there and have a presence.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked recently a couple stories on the podcast this week, one about the young man Ethan and just out fishing, right, on his Make-A-Wish trip, and how just his demeanor changed an entire person's life, and really several people's lives, because he ended up getting married after he quit drinking and had children. So all you see the impact and the ripple effect, how God moves in people and he can work through someone. And so, like you said, just by showing up and singing this song, even if she doesn't become famous, even if she doesn't win the competition or anything else like that, or get on our radar screens as a nation collectively on the entertainment scene ever again, there's going to be people she's crossed paths with, and God is going to use that for good. And that's a really cool thing. We may never know how on this side of eternity, but like you said, I like that. Just get out there and see what God does, because you never know. You just never know how God's going to take a situation and draw more people to him by using it. So Cool story there. I appreciate you bringing that one to the podcast today, Billy. We're going to head to the main thing now, and we've got a very powerful interview here. Billy talked to the brother-in-law of a Hamas hostage who's speaking out about his relative's dire plight. Moshe Lavi talked about his brother-in-law, Omri Maran, and who was taken hostage by Hamas, and goes through what they went through on that day, what they're feeling right now. This is 152 days in. Very powerful interview and a must-listen interview, really, given everything we're hearing about Israel in the mainstream media these days. That's today's main thing.
Take us through October 7th from your perspective, what you experienced, what you saw. You obviously, you were in the U.S. here, but just take us through that day for you.
Yeah, for me, it was a Friday night. I just arrived at a nightclub in Brooklyn. I live in Manhattan. I went out with friends to a music concert there. And then I started hearing, getting messages that there are rocket attacks on Israel. I grew up in Sderot on the Israel-Gaza border, so I experienced rocket attacks. I normalized them, sadly. And so I didn't really mind that at all. You just check with your family, friends, everyone is fine.
It was normal. It felt normal.
It felt normal because, to be honest, that was our reality for so many years. And it pains me to say it because I think the fact we tolerated it and allowed our government to tolerate it, October 7th happened. That was one of the reasons. So, but after a few minutes, it was clear this is different because the reports emerged that Hamas terrorists in their thousands are invading Israel, invading communities, kibbutzim like Nachal Oz, where my sister Lisha and Omri live, towns like Sderot, my hometown, where my parents live. And I started getting messages from friends, from family, checking on them. I, of course, left the club. It was a weird experience because I just started to have a great time with music, and then you receive this news and you don't know how to cope with it.
What was going through your heart in those moments of, you know, oh my goodness, my parents, my sister, my brother-in-law, the kids?
It's hard to describe. I think it was the worst night in my life. And look, I served for 6 years in the military. I was a captain, so I've had a good share of bad nights. And of course, growing up to terrorism. But that experience was dreadful because you feel helpless. You're so far away. The only way you can communicate is online, on WhatsApp. And you read the news. You see on social media horrific videos of terrorists coming into my hometown, killing people, butchering people. Was terrible. My heart was beating. I was losing sense of time and space. But I after a few minutes, I said I have to get a grip on myself. I took an Uber and left back to my flat and was with my family all night. And around 4:30 a.m. Eastern Time, U.S., we lost contact with my sister Lishai and Omri. The last thing they did was sending a photo of my two nieces playing with their family dog Mojo, and they said that they're losing their battery on the phone, and that electricity is gone, so they can't charge it. That was the last time we heard from them, and only 10 hours later, we found out what happened. My mom received a message that Lishai, my sister, survived, that the two babies survived, but that Omri was taken hostage. I'm grateful my parents were rescued and survived, and both my sisters survived, but Omri was taken. And during those 10 hours, we learned that Hamas terrorists barged into their home. They used a teenage boy from the kibbutz, their neighbor, Tomer, a 15-year-old teenager, to lure them to open the door. So they, of course, opened the door to save his life. Later on that day, Hamas murdered Tomer and most of his family. For hours, they were abused at their home. Held at gunpoint, their house was ransacked, ravaged. They were later grouped with another family, the Idan family, whose daughter Mayan was murdered, 18 years old, in front of her siblings, in front of her parents. Held hostage there for hours. It was live stream on Facebook, all this ordeal. They took a phone from...
The terrorists live streamed this.
Yeah, They took the phone of one of the family members of the Idan family and live streamed this entire ordeal. We found out later. We have the footage.
Have you seen that footage?
I've seen it. I don't think anybody can imagine what we feel when we see it. You see my sister holding Alma, my youngest niece, as gunshots are heard in the background, as rockets are heard in the background, people screaming. They're sitting on the floor, held hostage at gunpoint. It's terrible. At some point, Omri was told to get up alongside three others, and he was handcuffed and taken to Gaza as a hostage. My sister told him she loves him, she'll take care of the girls, and ask him not to be a hero because they're waiting for him to return safely home. And that was the last time she saw him. She was instructed to stay put or else she'll be killed for hours more. And for hours more, she witnessed what's going on in the kibbutz as it was burning, as people were screaming and shouting for their lives. But luckily, she was rescued by the IDF at 5:30 p.m. that day, 11 hours after the invasion started. We're grateful for that so much. She was rescued with a few others in the kibbutz. But Omri's is a hostage, and so we haven't started the healing process, of course. And we're focusing, laser focused, on bringing Omri home.
Do you have any idea his whereabouts, his condition? Has there been any contact or information on him since October 7th?
Hamas, sadly, does not allow the hostages to be visited by the ICRC or any other international organization. They don't provide any proof of life. We have no credible sources to ensure that they provide him efficient medical care either. We do know Omri was alive about 10 weeks ago, because in the previous round of release of hostages as a result of the negotiated agreement, some of the hostages were released in November, reported that Omri was alive, that he was in an okay condition, and that is that he learned in captivity that Lishai, my sister, and his two daughters survived, that gave them strength, that he projected strength to others who were held captive with him. But it's been so long since then, and we don't have any proof of life. We don't know his condition. We don't know his whereabouts. And of course, my nieces are dealing with the fact they don't have a father at home. My niece, Roni, who is 2.5 years old, already speaks. She speaks of the violence she witnessed on October 7th. She shares it with the kids in the temporary kindergarten she goes to. How horrible it is that children at the age of 2 and 3 hearing this. She draws it in paintings in that she draws. We take her to therapy because we have to do that to ensure that she gets every support she has. Every night my sister takes her out to say goodnight to the world, to the moon, to the stars, to nature. Omri used to do that, as I said. He was very spiritual and connected to the world. And they say goodnight to Daddy Omri as well. They scream it, they cry for him. But it's difficult. My sister is staying strong, taking care of the girls, and doing a lot of advocacy work. Only this week she was in Brussels advocating with European Union officials. She's been doing a lot in Israel as well. We all have been doing that together. Omri's father, Dani, his family. I've been doing it in Israel here and here in the U.S. We have to stay strong for her, for Dani, Omri's father, for the girls, and project the hope that we can bring him home until we know for certain that he will not return to us.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time and spending some time just bringing us through this. We will be praying for you and your family.
Thank you so much.
Wow, Billy, thanks for that interview. Man, it just makes you almost, as I listen to that, of course, sad for that family, but then enraged to think about the global conversation and particularly our national conversation where it's devolved to, with people condemning Israel and saying their response is too harsh and we have to have a ceasefire. Not very many people calling for the release of hostages who have been there 152 days. It's just mind-boggling. And as Pastor Jimmy Evans told us recently on this podcast, is there's not much other explanation for this level of wickedness other than it's satanic, it's evil, and these people's hearts have been blinded and given over to do Satan's bidding. It's just horrific stuff.
It is. And, you know, doing those interviews, I was in a concentrated time frame. And so there were a number of them. And it was pretty rattling, to be honest, because they all happened on the same day. And so it was, you know, hearing these stories. But I'm glad to be rattled because we get complacent and we forget. And we need to continue to hear these stories so we remember and we understand exactly what it is that happened that day.
Amen. Absolutely. Well, as you said, we're definitely praying for that family and all the people who are dealing with the after effects of that horrible attack on October 7th. So, all right. Well, we are going to have time on the podcast today for one last thing.
Yeah, I love this verse. It's Proverbs 12:22. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are his delight. Yeah. So quit your lying and get in line with God.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you combine that with vengeance is the Lord. So it's like, if you've been wronged by someone who's lying and not telling the truth, ultimately God will make all these things right, and so we can trust in him to do that. All right, that is where we're going to leave it on this Friday Junior edition of the podcast. Don't forget to tune in tonight to the CBN News YouTube channel for our coverage of the State of the Union address. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise. We'll see you back here tomorrow. God bless.